the Canadian Bitcoiners podcast is just two guys and maybe a guest or two discussing Bitcoin, Bitcoin equities, and the related macroeconomic space. It's not meant to be financial advice, so please, if you're doing any investing after listening to our program, do your own research, do your own due diligence, and understand that any money you invest can be lost. The show is meant for entertainment purposes only, and we hope you enjoy the program. Friends and enemies, welcome to another episode of the Canadian Bitcoiners podcast on the CBP Media Network. My name is Joey Still, and I'm here with my co-host whose name is Still Len. Buddy, it's good to see you. How's things over there today on this beautiful Monday in Southern Ontario?
I'm back. So everybody out there that wanted me back, I'm here. Everyone who wanted me to stay away, F you, because it's not going to be the case. No, all is good over here. We're just juggling what's going on with the Ontario... there's the labor strife that's going on over there with the teachers. So, oh, not teachers, the executive, whoever it is. I'm not sure exactly who it is. But anyways,
what does Coopy even stand for? Do you know? I have no idea. Coopy.
So they do janitors and also educational assistants.
Yeah,
So that's, I'm not exactly sure what the acronym stands for though. But that's what the members compose of. So it's impacting us over here, but it's been resolved for the most part, at least temporarily. So back to school tomorrow and it's all going to be good over here. So how's things over there, Joey?
They're good, man. I am busy as all hell, but feels pretty good. I have been meaning to schedule a dental hygienist, a cleaning basically appointment for the last little while. And I continue to forget. I think I might try and do it this week. So I'm looking forward to that. Do you go to a dentist or do you go to a hygienist and then the dentist when you need like x-rays and stuff like that?
So if my good friend is the dentist that works on me, but it's not him. It's his hygienist that works, that does the cleaning. And when it comes time to do something above and beyond, he steps in. But luckily I haven't had a cavity in my life. I've been very blessed in that regard. So yeah.
That's a sign of a good dentist, because a lot of people, like you probably have small cavities. Like a lot of people have small cavities, but a good dentist will say like, don't worry about that. It's not that big a deal. You mean you've never had a filling, right?
Correct.
Yeah. So there's a little bit of a difference. Like I have little cavities that like my hygienist and like dentists I've had in the past will be like, you don't need to get this filled. Like, don't worry about it. This is pretty standard. Because the science behind fillings, the corporate big dentist lobby wants you to get fillings because you never just get one filling. You always have to get the thing cared for, replaced. They drill a like big hole in your teeth. It's almost like fixing like a chip in something, you know, like you cut around the crack and then you try and like, you know what? That's how they do it. I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
Bitcoiners dental podcast.
If you want more information, I'll be happy to get you in touch with them. And in fact, we'll talk offline a little bit more about this. It's a very interesting field and there's a lot I could share with you that may be enlightening for you. So
for sure. Yeah. For sure. Anyway, so we got a lot to talk about tonight, Len. It's been a busy couple of days here in the Bitcoin space. We'll start with our sponsor, ShakePay, as always, man. The title sponsor, the presenting sponsor, best place for Canadians to buy and never sell, even on down days. It feels like I've been saying even on down days for the last few months. So even in down months, even in cold bear markets, never sell. Tons of stuff going on there. ShakePay Earn, you put some CAD in your account, they pay you out in Bitcoin. I started to get my Earn stuff last week or 2 weeks ago, which was dope. They got ShakePaid, still giving out money. I saw somebody got comped a $42 purchase today off of their CAD balance in Bitcoin. Can't beat it. They also have Shaking Sats. You use our promo code Charlie Beta Peter CBP, and you can score 1,000 sats a day if you shake for a year straight. What a feat that would be if you're able to shake for a year straight. And then they also, of course, have the Shake Squads, where you and a couple of buddies get together. Everything you spend, you get 42 sats a piece. And then if you do sign up, if you're a new user, your first $100, you get $10 into your account. You can't beat that. ShakePay is a great company, man. We love them. And I love the people are getting hyped on the merch that they made for us. A lot of pictures and commentary. One guy, Paulie, sent me a DM, said the shirt feels really, really good in person. So I'm glad to hear that. I'd love to get mine. I think we're keeping one or two. I don't remember if we decided to keep them or not, but if we do keep them, I'll wear it like to the gym or something, or maybe on the show. I probably should wear it on the show, I guess. Eh?
Funny thing is I have a few over here and I haven't put it on because I'm not sure if we're going to give them all out. So my apologies for people that got it late. I mailed them out late, but they're all out and everybody should have them. But as for our second sponsor, it's Ledin. And now you have some Bitcoin, you bought it from ShakePay. What are you going to do with it? Why not put it on Ledin and earn some interest on that? So Dump 150,000 sats or 75 USDC after opening an account with our referral code below. Keep that on your platform for 15 consecutive days, and they'll give you 10 USDC added to your account. So I also mentioned that they give you interest on your BTC, but not just that, USDC. Note, no Celsius token, no FTT. This is only stuff that we are very confident with. Also, if you have a lot of Bitcoin, have some bills, and you need to pay them, you don't want to sell your Bitcoin, why not just borrow against it? Lenin's there to help you out. You can just use your Bitcoin as collateral. 50% loan to value. They give you the money. You're good to go. Also, if you think that the price is going up, B2X that sucker, where you can double up your Bitcoin stack, time the market correctly, pull out, and easy. You're good to go. Yeah, it's simple as that. Just don't ask me when to do it, because I have no freaking clue. And the last thing to have is the Bitcoin-backed mortgages. This is an industry first, but not available in every jurisdiction. So check their website where they're offering that, along with what are the rates for the interest on the savings for Bitcoin and USDC, because they change on a month-to-month basis.
Bro, some questions. Bitcoin all caps. I saw your tweet, sir, earlier, whether or not Ledin has exposure to FTX. I have no idea. I suspect no. My guess is no, given the nature of like some of Maurizio's tweets and retweets lately about proof of reserves and all this. So I'm going to say they don't. But I mean, you could ask that. They wouldn't care. Mario Gibney would tell you for sure. He's very accessible. I'm 100% sure that he would let you know. So anyway, Len, the price of Bitcoin right now is $20,670 US. What is it in good old Canuck bucks?
We're sliding. It's unfortunately $27,830. What happened today? Because we were much, much higher at the beginning of the day than we are right now. Something must have happened that made people lose confidence. Whatever it is, it's out of our hands. It's in the collective.
Setting the price back with the hours, buddy, like always.
That's a good time to stack NFA. So I have nothing really to check off my list of things to do here, Joey. Do you have anything you want to check off quickly?
I do have housekeeping, because we always leave this at the end of the show. Tomorrow night, me and Len, Brandon from Green Candle for a bit, SB from the Woke Antidote, and maybe other people if I have time to recruit a few more Americans. We're going to do an election night special, because fuck it, why not? We'll be watching anyway. So better to watch with you guys than watch with my wife, who will not care at all about the U.S. midterms. So 7:15, 7:30-ish, we're going to start. Look for the notification, I guess. If you subscribe to the channel, you'll probably get one, or use the bell. I can't believe I'm telling you to use the bell, but on Twitter, YouTube, look for the start time. We're going to be on for about an hour. A-Len, probably till like 8:30, something like that. Maybe a little later. See what goes on with the midterm results. And then Wednesday, Len and I are talking to Tom and Nick Carrazza of Your Life, Your Terms, Rockstar Real Estate.
I should have worn a shirt today. What the heck?
Whose show we've been on a bunch. I might not even wear a shirt Wednesday night. I got to show these guys what I'm really fucking made of once and for all.
But well, if you're going to wear one.
I might change to the other room. I'm going to go clean up the weight room and just you do the interview, and I'll just be repping two wheels on the other side.
You're coming with the pump. Well, if you're going to, because I have two of their shirts. If you're going to wear one, I'd like to wear the other one, so you don't come in looking like, you know, we're dressed by the same people. So let me know what you are wearing, because I'll adapt.
We've done that many times before, by the way. Pretty sure we did that with Kaboom Racks, wearing the same shirt for those interviews too. Anyway, so we got a lot of stuff going on the network this week. And then next week we got some more stuff. And the week after that, we got some more stuff, and, you know, lots of stuff as always going on. So we appreciate it. I should say also, when you guys, you know, mention us and tweet us, get on this show, this person should come on. And I know some of you guys are trying to help us with Lynn Alden. That's proven to be a tough mountain to climb, but I hope we can climb it at some point, because she'd be a great get.
We have connections. We could do it. We just have to engage those connections. So
we'll see what's up. Hit me with the A block, buddy. We got lots to say. Oh, let's get into it.
Buddy, we have lots to talk about, not just in A block, but also beyond it too. This is going to be a very, very informative show. So we'll start off with the whole saga with going on with FTX. And 2022 is, well, it's looking at the shape up to be a stellar year for the shitcoin crowd. First, we had Terra Luna. They bit the bullet, and we had the algorithmic stablecoin prove itself that it doesn't have long-term value. And then we had Voyager Digital. And this was a publicly traded company, no less, declared bankruptcy. And ditto with Celsius, although it was not a publicly traded company, but they did have heavy emphasis on DeFi. And, of course, Celsius and Voyager both were neck deep into the shitcoin assets. And now it may be FTX turned to take a kick at the can of insolvency. We'll see if this is going to happen, because this is rather ironic to me, because considering they have been linked in the past for buying up Voyager and Celsius assets. And there were also rumors that floating around that they were potentially going to maybe bring back one of these companies back to life. So the whole issue around FTX stems from tokens created by the companies owned and operated by Sam Bankman-Fried. And well, the main one we're looking at for today is the FTT token. And this is a token that's issued by FTX. And FTT is what could be considered a utility token because it could be staked. It could be used for reducing transaction fees on FTX. It could be used for, get this, Joey, leverage positions. I didn't know this.
It's basically BNB, right? It's the same sort of vibe.
I didn't know BNB had that feature where you could do leverage positions. If they did,
I'm pretty sure. I know it reduces fees, and I know you can stake it on Binance, or at least you could. Maybe you can't anymore, but it's very similar anyway. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. But yeah.
No. Intervene anytime you have to. And along with that, there's also a number of different functions along with this token. So I'm not going to really get into it because, to be perfectly honest, I don't know a heck of a lot about it. But this is where the things really get interesting. So Alameda Research, this is a company that's mostly owned by SBF. It also, this company is financially backing FTX. So without Alameda, FTX would not be in a position it's in. In fact, it may not be around, period. So there was a recent article from CoinDesk, and it reports that Alameda has $14.6 billion in assets as of June 30th. Note the date. And the number that they are showing, 14.6, this is obviously, or at least in my opinion, it's going to be lower because given the state of the overall financial environment. So the single largest asset back then was the unlocked FTT, $3.66 billion. And presumably that it was FTT that was unstaked or not tied to any transaction like a leveraged position. And then there was another $2.6 billion in FTT collateral. This is likely liquid FTT, and the list goes on and on. There's even several hundred FTT that's locked up in staking and other garbage that they've listed to, like the Solana token. And so there's a good chunk of equity that is based on the value of a variety of shitcoins. That's a very scary situation to be in. And in terms of the value, you could look at the Solana token. It's gone, well, it's been relatively flat since June, but FTT has gone down about 10% since then. Even the SRM token's gone 10% down since June. And I would imagine the same thing is applicable to a lot of other assets they have there. So that number that they're reporting back in June is much, much less. And the SRM token is also something that is rather interesting because it is a project that is spearheaded by SBF. So between the SRM token and the FTT token, his whole empire is backed by nothing. And its solvency relies on the tokens he created not going belly up. So is this a pump and dump scheme? Perhaps. SBF does have experience with pump and dumps given his level of involvement with Celsius. And how big of an impact could this be with Bitcoiners? We saw what happened earlier this year, with what happened with Luna, Celsius, and Voyager when they all went to zero or nearly zero. And the price of Bitcoin was marginally impacted. Will there be the same results this time around? Well, perhaps, but it may be more widespread because FTX, the exchange, is number 3 overall when you look at the volume traded on all the other exchanges, and they are behind Binance and OKX. So this is no small exchange. And speaking of Binance, well, CZ came out and he was tweeting something very interesting, and I'm going to quote his tweet here. As part of Binance exit from FTX liquidity last year, Binance received roughly $2.1 billion USD equivalent in cash. It was BUSD and FTT. So due to recent revelations that have come to light, we've decided to liquidate any remaining FTT on our books. So basically the revelations, what specific revelations is he referring to? Because nothing is really, he didn't specify. Is it Alameda's assets book that's littered with tokens issued by SBF's led companies? I don't know, but something needs to be answered here. I don't think we're going to get the answer. So we have to try to connect the dots. And why did Binance exit from FTX liquidity last year? So many unanswered questions. I'd love to know what's going on. And he goes on to tweet, and another quote, every time a project publicly fails, it hurts every user and every platform, end quote. Project publicly fails. These are very strong words. And is he thinking that FTX is done? Like I said, FTX is no small company. Lots of volumes. They're an official sponsor of the Major League Baseball official sponsor of Mercedes and F1, sponsor of the Washington Bullets, I mean the Washington Wizards, the Washington Capitals. They also have deals with Tom Brady, Steph Curry, so much more. So it's a company with wide reach in modern society. And what is concerning is, well, there's going to potentially be a lot of people holding the bag should things go really bad. FTX, note this, they're based out of the Bahamas. So unless I'm wrong, that is outside the reach of U.S. laws. So who knows how things will be dealt with should there be a bankruptcy. But the sad thing is, there's going to still be a lot of people that are going to lose a lot of money here because they never learn from other people's mistakes. We say this all the time. Don't leave anything on the exchange. People got burned just this year by Celsius. People got burned just this year by Voyager. We heard so many stories of people losing five, six, and even seven figures worth of money just because they had faith in the system. Another thing, don't trust these utility scam tokens. Just because a token has a particular value right now doesn't mean it'll have the value that will stand the test of time. And when a token is created, it's not, and if it's done through just the effort of code, well, there may not be any value there and it could be simply worthless. So if you think that there's smoke here without any fire, just look at the tweet that was sent today by SBF, in which he was accusing a competitor, Binance, for going after them. He's also trying to stop the bleeding, it looks like, by trying to say that they have enough to cover the client's holdings. We heard this shit before, and we've seen what happened. So I'm not fucking sold on this particular narrative. So he was saying that there's heavy regulations that, well, because of that, they may not be impacted. Voyager Digital, I just want to note, they were a publicly traded company. Any large exposure to shitcoins that have a massive drawdown will wreck any company, regulated or not. And one thing to watch out for the next little while is Binance is going to liquidate. They mention it, their FTT holdings, over the next few months, they indicated. This is probably going to hurt the price for the foreseeable future because there's going to be some downward pressure. And throw in the hysteria from people that they're going to start selling en masse, well, this could really drive down the price of FTT, will hurt Alameda's balance sheet, and who the fuck knows what's going to happen. So, and another thing I just want to point out, maybe you can answer this question, Joy, because I just don't know. If FTT tokens are using for leverage plays, what happens if the actual value of the FTT token goes down significantly? Are they going to be asked to cover the cost in terms of what's the difference? I don't know. And if that's the case, it's going to create some added stress in the whole system. And just something a few months ago, this is rather funny. Just a few months ago, SBF was, well, he was touted to be the white knight, saving a bunch of exchanges. And now it looks like he's suffering the same fate. And it's very, very ironic. FTX, they raised $420 million just last year. 69 investors invested in this, including the Ontario Teachers Pension Board, BlackRock, and others. Some very big names. So remember when Celsius raised $400 million in a joint venture with the CDPQ? Fuck, it's funny, Joey. History is repeating itself over and over again.
Len, I know you like baseball, so I snuck in a baseball reference for you here. It looks to me, to your point about the leverage and whether or not that FTT is being used as collateral for other stuff, it looks like the Mendoza line on the FTT token is $22, about $22. So let's see. If they don't let it drop below $22, you can guess why. You know, how are they going to do it? I don't know. There's a couple of things I want to add to your summary. One is that the likelihood, if you look at FTT as part of like the enterprise value of FTX, okay, let's say you look at it that way. It's on their balance sheet. It's fair to say that that's part of the net asset value of that company, whatever that, you know, company is. Is it Alameda? Is it FTX? I think they share a balance sheet or pragmatically share a balance sheet. So you get those tokens on there to the tune of a couple of billion dollars. What is the likelihood that on the way up, FTX used those tokens as a way to, you know, garner loans and investment in the company, that it basically bootstrapped the growth of the company on the back of those minted out of thin air tokens? If they did, I think, first of all, I think it's likely they did. I'm not saying it's for sure, but I think it's fairly likely. If they did, that's an unregistered securities offering. Equity in the company via FTT is an unregistered securities offering. To your point about them being docile in the Bahamas, this is exactly why. Because they know that that's illegal. And so what they've done is do everything illegal on the way up, and now they're going to try and buy their way back into favor vis-a-vis regulation, which CZ also mentioned. This idea that they're talking to regulators behind his back trying to, you know, probably squash the competition, which honestly is the right business move. But the problem is when you're exposed like this, your competitors are going to take shots at your jugular, and CZ is doing just that. The other thing I would say is that CZ is you know, now pointedly saying that they have about $8 billion worth of ETH in two of their cold wallets at Binance. Why would he be bringing this up? Does he care about this because he thinks that liquidating that Ethereum could put Bankman-Fried into even more dire straits? Does he think that, you know, there's some play to be made there with that token as well, given that FTX deals in a lot of these kind of ETH ERC-20 style garbage coins? I have no idea. Honestly, I'm not sure. FTX is defending some of this now, or at least someone who seems to be working for or speaking for FTX named Caroline or Carolyn. I don't know who this person is, but she seems to be garnering a little bit of traction on Twitter. And what they're saying is that FTX, let me get the numbers right here. FTX has $10 billion of quote-unquote other assets not reflected on the CoinDesk balance sheet details, as well as hedge strategies that aren't listed. And given the tight nature of the credit space at the moment, most of their loans are now they're paid already or close to being paid. All I see on the FTX side is SBF tweeting that things are okay, tweeting things are going to be fine. He's got his plebs and peons tweeting that they have extra money that CoinDesk didn't account for and hedge strategies CoinDesk didn't account for. The problem is that with that much FTT on the sheet, on the ledger, you can't escape a crash in that token. You cannot. And I think CZ, whether he thinks FTT is worthless or not, he looks at that balance sheet leak and says, can I risk a 50 or 40% haircut on this thing? Can I risk the contagion that would cause to the other tokens on my platform, presumably the other tokens on my balance sheet? Or should I just be cutting bait, getting out of this thing and not worrying about it, letting SBF deal with the consequences and the fallout? I think that's probably what he's doing. Funny enough, in that CoinDesk article, they mentioned there's almost $1 billion in locked Solana on the FTX balance sheet, the Alameda balance sheet. 863 million. You can't even get that out, apparently. It's basically illiquid if it's locked and staking. So like this is what we talk about sometimes on the show with like Ethereum staking and other just kind of garbage side token shitcoin staking. It's not up to you. None of it is up to you. If you need it back, you don't have a say in when you get it back and how you get it back and who sends it back to you and under what conditions. FTX now is charging 10% on any unstaked FTT token if you want it immediately. And if you don't want it immediately, you got to wait 2 weeks to get it out. Like, I don't know if that's new or old, but I bet you a lot of people are finding that out for the first time because they are panicking. And now, you know, this is what you see. This is these kinds of Ponzi's where you can't leave. Your lockup is too long. And then, you know, these people who are unwise to begin with start having these thoughts of FOMO, like, well, if I take it out and it rebounds, you know, it's been fine so far, blah, blah, blah. Like, I don't understand this. Now, you mentioned BlockFi.
No, I didn't.
I thought you did.
So should have.
FTX owns BlockFi. And if FTX is supporting any of the BlockFi loans on the back of that FTT token, they're fucked. That token is in so much trouble right now. I'm waiting for Zach Prince to start going on Reddit and sending his support team to the BlockFi sub and telling people to hang on, don't pull their money out. Because it looks to me that if BlockFi is only, you know, what was it, May, maybe, when all that other shit happened? They're 5 months away from, you know, a very near brush with bankruptcy and insolvency if they didn't get there and just hide it or obfuscate it somehow and you know, through the FTX purchase, were able to avoid disaster for their clients. If that stuff is collateralized or protected or propped up by FTT, what the fuck are you going to do now if FTT goes under? What's the plan? No one wants a token. To your point, if you can make it with code, okay, or if you can make it with staking like Solana, Ethereum, FTT, BNB, all this other garbage, if you can do it without physical energy production, the way Bitcoin does its proof of work, block production, it's not worth anything. There's no cost to it for the people who are in charge. It should remind you of another system that you may find yourself trying to escape. Anonymous listener or viewer, you don't want to be a part of this stuff. I'm looking forward to seeing what happens, Len, but this is going to be another huge, huge stain on the space. Do you know this guy was on the cover of Forbes in August, SPF, with the text, the next Warren Buffett? Did you see that? Like, come on. What are we talking about here? Like, we can't keep doing this. We can't keep doing this. We got to figure this out. This is why when we talk about good information, making sure you're a node for good information, making sure you share accurate stuff, making sure you give a convincing argument, this is why it's important that when people come into the space, they don't see SBF. They see Marty or us or Safedean, or don't mind me including us with those other people, by the way. But like, that's who they've got to see. They got to see people who are giving signal or trying to be honest actors, giving you the risks of Bitcoin. And there are risks to Bitcoin, of course. We talk about them all the time. Government, legal, military, energy, geopolitics. It's all there for Bitcoin. Those are risks. But Bitcoin is not going to rug pull you because the founders get freaky with a fucking token that's making them rich on the side. That's not going to happen in Bitcoin. But it can happen everywhere else in the space, including the quote-unquote second best in Ethereum. Everyone else can do this. And you're seeing it. The biggest players in the space, you're seeing it. If SBF continues to tweet, like, Len, I don't know. I didn't go back in the almanac here, okay? But how many times have CEOs tweeted that everything's going to be fine, steady lads, as they say, and then been fucked 48 hours later? How many times? They got to be batting 1,000. You know what I mean? They're batting 1,000. So who's to say this is any different? We're going to find out. But it seems to me that SBF is asking for cooperation an awful lot for a guy who says everything is fine and that $22 is the hold and whatever else. It doesn't look good, man. I continue to be shocked that, you know, I'll finish with this, that the biggest pension funds in the world, like the Ontario Teachers, okay? So a pension fund whose investment is so coveted, it shows up in HBO programs about, you know, Wall Street sharks. They're investing in this. This is just another example of what I've said many times. There are no competent money managers. Money managers' success rate is a derivative of whether or not the printer is on and the conditions are loose. That's fucking it. There's nothing else. It's always, always, always a derivative of what the Federal Reserve is doing with their monetary policy, their fiscal policy. And that's it. They made poor investments here with FTX. They got to be freaking out right now because God only knows how big that number is. Bonds and stocks, as we mentioned many times, down right now for the first time in forever together. These guys can't afford these huge losses, man. And this is another waves are going out. Let's see who's exposing themselves on the beach here.
You mentioned that they have Solana on the books, and it's
almost a billion. I got the number of Solana at 292 million unstaked, 863 million staked, more than $1 billion worth of Solana.
The staked or unstaked, from what I understand, it's irrelevant because you could simply unstake it. There's no mechanism that keeps it on there like ETH. When you unstake from Solana, from what I understand, it's not this. You don't have the same barriers like
something is happening in Solana because Solana is down 30% in the last 48 hours.
There is a reason why. It's because FTX is very much in the Solana market. They have a lot of Solana token.
You think they're selling to defend?
They must be. They must be. So there's creating a lot of downward pressure. And yeah, I mean, the one thing you also mentioned is with respect to the FTT token, the 10% immediate withdrawal fee that's applied rather than waiting the 2 weeks. In a way, it kind of reminds me a little bit of the Luna fiasco. At the time when you stake Luna, you had to wait, I think, 3 weeks before you could unstake it when you initially start the process to unstake it. But by that time, unfortunately, it was all
too late.
Withered away in terms of value, is gone. But that 10%, who gets that 10%?
It ain't me and you. I ain't getting it. Someone's getting it. It's probably SBF. He's probably getting it.
What a fucking scam.
Buddy.
I would imagine a lot of people are doing this.
It's like that meme with the astronaut and the other astronaut and the planet. Like, it's all a scam. It always has been a scam. Yeah. We've been saying it's a scam forever. You and me have been saying it forever. You know, guys like Corey Clipston, who is absolutely like mauling these things one after another, way out in front of the curve. And by the way, okay, for people who say that, And Corey brought this up yesterday, but he's not the only person I've seen say it. For people who want to say that CZ is doing the crypto ecosystem, the Bitcoin ecosystem, whatever, a service by, you know, whatever, flexing true, quote unquote, you know, altruistic virtues on SPF. This fucking guy tried to roll back the chain last year on I can't remember which token, maybe on Ethereum he wanted to, or on Bitcoin, I forget. But like last year, this guy wanted to roll back the chain on a token, or 2 years ago, whatever it was. Time is flying because of COVID. But this guy's not good either. All these guys are running casino Ponzi bullshit operations based around tokens that have no value that they force you to use because you're addicted to gambling on garbage. That's the whole business model. And until we stop this, like, you know, I hesitate to say, like, is the bottom really in or no on Bitcoin? So there you go. Yeah, all caps in the chat. If you wanted to roll back the Bitcoin blockchain, like, come the fuck on, man. What are we talking about here? This guy's not a good actor, okay? He's not. These people are all the same. They're all playing the same game. They're preying on weak-minded people who want to get rich quick, and they want to get rich quick because the system is broken, blah, 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 blah. You've heard it all here before. Enough with this. Stop playing these games. Tell your friends and family. Tell your mechanic. Tell your aunt. Tell your uncle. Tell your whoever, okay? Tell your sister's hot friend. Enough. No more gambling on shit. Buy Bitcoin if you want to play in the, you know, wealth preservation space. You don't like buying equities or bonds. Don't do this stuff, man. Because, you know, SBF is not going to pay. If FTX goes under, okay, SBF is going to be fine. His buddies are going to be fine. That board's going to be fine.
He still drives a Toyota Corolla, so he doesn't live a very extravagant life.
I am sure he lives an extravagant fucking life. Just because he doesn't drive the car doesn't mean he doesn't live an extravagant fucking life. The guy's worth a couple hundred billion or something like that. Some stupid number.
He is worth a lot, but in terms of what he's displaying, he's showing that he's still a commoner, and his intention is he still wants to give away all this money. And in essence, it's going to be done. Maybe not his, but he's going to give away all the money that's been tied up with his company, the way things are playing out.
I honestly can't stand any of this stuff. Boomers in the chat saying we is the wrong word. You're right. It's not us. It's other people. The parasitic behavior has to stop. You're absolutely right, Boomer. I don't know. I have nothing else to say on this. I think it's nuts. It's nuts. It's disappointing, but predictable, like so many other things in this ecosystem.
Let's move on, because you may not have a chance to see the kickoff of Monday Night Football. I want to move on to Clown World Financial News, and this is going to be a doozy. Because
CFF. CWF.
Be ready. So I want to first start things off. No matter how bad things are out there, and you might be working extra hours to make ends meet because of the rising cost of living, you might find children's Tylenol on the shelves. Heck, you might be even walking the picket lines in Ontario, given what's going on with the education workers. But one thing is for certain, the U.S. is not in a recession. And this was reiterated this past week by Ron Klein. He's the White House chief of staff. So this guy's no real, this guy's no pleb. He's in a very important position. He told MSNBC, "We are not in a recession. I want to be really, really clear on that." And I'm relieved from this confirmation. My faith with them holding this together was beginning to waver. But one thing that did come in strong this past week was the job numbers. And this is unfortunately going to cause some real issues, and I'm going to explain why. Employers are still trying to hire people, but the unemployment rate is slowly creeping up. Okay, that seems rather odd. So in terms of numbers, 260,000 new jobs were added by employers, but yet the unemployment rate rose 0.2% to 3.7%. So here's where the problem comes in. The Federal Reserve, they're going to probably continue raising rates, and they're going to do so with the hopes of cooling off the rising cost of living, and the result is going to be a less robust economy. And with these job numbers coming in, it's going to give the Fed more justification to raise rates and continue to do so, as the labor market is still showing, looks like, strong signs that it's doing very well. But digging into these numbers, there's a lot more to be skeptical than in reality. And why would you ask this? Well, the data they're using to determine this, the labor market, and the unemployment numbers, they come from two different surveys, and each pulls from different data. And the question is, how does 260,000 jobs get added, yet unemployment go up? Here's the answer. The fucking thing is a whole scam. This whole thing is a fucking scam.
Just cut this show right now, okay? Everything we say, it's all a fucking scam. It's everything we talk about is a scam. It's all a scam, Len. Mm-hmm. All of it. It's all, oh my God. Go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah. Well, even more concerning here. is that if you look at it, when they add the jobs, they treat a full-time job and a part-time job equally. And it's understandable why they're doing this, but it's hard to justify to me and just about everybody else that one part-time job is the same as one full-time job. They really are not. Even more concerning about these numbers, the Bureau of Labor Statistics only polls big businesses to determine the labor numbers. So small businesses, which makes up a significant portion of the U.S. economic engine, is not captured in these numbers. Holy fuck. So what we're getting is just a snippet of what is out there in reality. And one can't make the broad claim that job gains in big businesses also translate to job gains in small businesses. The job markets in the two, they're unique and exclusive in each of the two markets. So while officials in the White House, they're probably high-fiving each other after seeing these October labor market numbers, and it's all fictitious, no doubt, but they're going to be using this in a political manner, which then leads me to the next topic, the office which should be free of political interference, the Federal Reserve. And this past week, they did exactly what a lot of people were predicting by raising rates by another 75 basis points, and that's bringing up the Federal Reserve bank rate to 4%. Note, this is the same rate that was 0.25% at the beginning of this year. So it went up in this year so far, 3.75% or 16x in less than a year. That's insane. And what's the result of this knee-jerk reaction by the Fed? Well, the housing market, it's taken a beating. For example, Wells Fargo, they've noted that mortgage demand through their firm has dropped, get this, 90% year over year for mortgage applications. 90% significant drop. And I'm sure this number is not going to move up unless the housing market continues to tank and gets to rock bottom prices. I don't think we got there just yet. And with respect to housing, I want to go briefly on a tangent here. I'm sorry. The housing market, it makes up a massive portion of the US economy, also the Canadian economy. We're not clean from this one as well. But the housing market, it's a dead end street. Buying a home and selling it at a profit later on by either sitting in it or just doing minor improvements does nothing to improve the economy. Improving the economy is creating a business, providing a service that people want, or creating a good that people want and potentially making people's lives better off. It's also improving the economy is working for somebody and providing your service to them and making their business better. That's the stuff that improves the economy. The same cannot be said with the housing market. It's built in a fiat environment. It works best in an inflating money supply system. Buying a home, throwing a new paint on the walls, replacing the carpet with laminate floorings and selling it for a profit does fucking nothing to improve the job market or the economy. Absolutely fucking nothing. It's, in fact, I will say it's detrimental because what it's doing, it's creating new money that's floating around through the creation of debt. And that's my fucking two cents of that. It's just, it's fucking incredible that people love this thing. But nonetheless, that's my rant on that. I want to talk about savings and specifically household savings. And this is another thing that's going to be impacted by the Federal Reserve, their reactionary decisions from this year. And sure, by keeping more money in the bank, you're going to get some more interest by keeping it parked there. But the flip side, debt, well, that's going to be a bigger burden to shoulder moving forward. And we've been talking about people that they've been using up their savings to help sustain their living standards. And this is evident by using the latest information from the Federal Reserve economist. And their data indicates that households still have approximately $1.7 trillion in excess savings that has been accumulated through mid-2021. And this number is down from as high as $2.3 trillion. It's drawn down quite a bit. And breaking this even further, $350 billion of the excess savings as of June were held by lower half of the income distribution. That is a very small number of dollars comparatively that is held by probably a large number of people. These are people that are very sensitive to rate hikes and also a faltering economy because they have little to no buffer should things go really bad and the pain that Jerome Powell has been predicting is going to come to pass. Also of note is credit card debt in the U.S. Joey, do you have any idea how much credit card debt has racked up so far in the United States? Give me a number. And it's not yet in the trillions, but it's not in the millions. So it's
I don't know the number, but I've seen this chart of credit card debt basically hockey sticking over the last like 3 or 4 months. Give me $739 billion.
That's close. It's $930 billion.
Oh.
So it's a very large number. if this amount is carried on a month-to-month basis, and using Len math, if we use 16% interest, that's the average rate for a credit card right now that I could tell. Well, the Americans will then be spending $149 billion annually just to pay the interest on that fucking $930 billion. $149 billion. It's incredible amount of money that's going to be floating around. But here's another good stat for you to digest. Small businesses. I've been talking about them a lot in the past little while. They've been struggling to pay rent. And I went through my old notes. And back in July, we talked that they only had 35% of small businesses could pay their rent at that time. They were either late or they couldn't pay it in full. 35% in July. Now that number's climbed to 40%. That number's climbing even higher. It won't be long before we get to 50%. What happens once we get there? It's going to happen. I think there's going to be some executive order coming out where money's going to come down from the White House. It's going to go directly into the pockets of these small businesses with the sole purpose of paying off their rent. There's going to be some rent jubilee. Let's see what happens. And some more clown world shit, Joey. We had some this past week, two amazing stories. One about Senator Thomas Carper and another about Congressman Alan Lowenthal. Both individuals of power because each sit in respective positions of the U.S. government. In fact, Senator Carper sits on the Senate Finance Committee and Congressman Lowenthal is the chair of the Energy and Mineral Resources Subcommittee. And this is they plan for energy and solar wind resources moving forward. Well, Senator Carper, he bought up $110,000 in Ranger Equity Bear ETF. This is an active ETF that shorts U.S. listed stocks. Congressman Lowenthal has disclosed purchases in Sunrun. Sunrun is an American provider of photovoltaic. I hope I spelled that right.
Photovoltaic.
Solar energy generation systems. So what the fuck are these gentlemen? What do they know? And what are they doing fucking investing in shit? The perception is abuse of power. It's hard to overlook it. How much could you not give a fuck about your constituents or your fellow Americans to do this kind of shit? This is where you need somebody like Greta to come up and say, how dare you? Not to fucking talk about climate, to talk about this bullshit. But anyways, I don't want to get too angry about this. And I think people are just desensitized to all this because we've seen so much of this. We've come to expect this from people in office. This is how far we've gone downhill. But don't worry. These are the people that have our backs right up to the point till they see the soft spot. And then they're going to fucking stab us in the back and pad their pocketbooks at the same time. And on the topic of stabbing us in the back, we could talk about the Strategic Petroleum Reserve. And I think, correct me if I'm wrong here, the sale of this is being used to prop up the GDP, is it not?
It's probably at least being measured as part of GDP. The question is, what are they selling it for? I really have no idea. It's not like oil's as much as it was, you know.
It's got to be market.
I mean, it is. Well, for sure, they're selling it at market price. I don't know what the, like, are they going to keep doing this after tomorrow night? Is that the plan?
This remains to be seen. But
I don't know.
In terms of how much they depleted it, well, the White House, they have come out and said they have to buy back 200 million barrels of oil to refill the SPR. And how much does this translate in terms of dollars and cents? That's a cool $18 billion.
What about Solana? Can they buy it with Solana?
just mint it. But I'm using the $90 per barrel. I think it's gone up a little bit more. So a little bit more than $18 billion that I quoted. And these numbers, they seem small in comparison to other line items. But that's $18 billion that's not going to be spent on social programs. It's not going to be spent on paying off the debt. This shit keeps getting piled on. We'll just pay off the debt later. No fucking problem. This is how we got to the $31 trillion in debt, which continues to climb. And all this debt, man, we got to find creative ways in order to fund this. And one way that they may be doing in the States is a windfall tax on U.S. energy producers. And the idea is being thrown around by Joe Biden. And this would force energy producers to pay a tax on excess profits. Well, this is similar to what is being done in the UK. There's no better way to increase the cost of the pump by asking those that produce it to pay more in taxes. I'm sure they're going to not pass off those fees to consumers. I think they probably will. And in terms of what's going on, well, I didn't think that it was the companies themselves that are raising. I thought it was the war in Ukraine that caused all this. Am I wrong? This is what they've been touting all along. It's a real problem. It's not fucking greed over there. It's the Ukraine fucking strife that's going on. Whatever. I must have missed something. And speaking about the war in Ukraine, it's being reported down that American military personnel are over there. And it's not for the reasons you think. It's not boots on the ground. They're there they're going to keep track of billions of dollars worth of equipment and weapons that has been sent by the United States since the Russian invasion. What this means is they're going to have a comprehensive spreadsheet of when it is time to get the fuck out of Dodge. And they'll be able to leave, when they leave Ukraine, they'll have a list of whatever equipment they're going to be leaving behind for whoever controls the area. I have an idea that could raise some funds. They could sell that list to whoever controls that area, and they could use those funds to help prop up their government and pay off some of the debt. So that spreadsheet is going to be worth a lot of money. Free advice from the CBP. We just keep dishing it out. Thinking outside the box, that's what we do.
It's unbelievable, man. Lots of stuff there. Great, great monologue from you as always. So some fun stuff going on in America right now. A lot of fun stuff. I'll try and stay away from a few of the things that would be repeating what you mentioned, but there's a couple of great indicators that things are not going well over there. And through the lens of the election, you can see this a little more clearly because it's focused in a way that's supposed to catch the attention of the normie. There's a great clip from the weekend of some commentator. I don't know who this idiot is, but some woman talking about how inflation is a word that's outside of the normal lexicon and only, you know, is only being used because Republicans are teaching their voters about inflation, but no one actually talks like this. And so you shouldn't talk like this either. This is not something for you to be concerned about, normal person. That's a great indicator that something's going wrong. Okay. Let's go into a little bit more detail here about the Federal Reserve and what they're, you know, some of the stats they're producing. They produce this thing every so often called the Financial Stability Report. Have you seen this before? Have you heard of this?
No.
This is the first time I've ever looked at it. And I saw this on Joe Wang's Twitter probably a couple days ago. Fed guy, there's some number. It's either 21 or 12. I forget. He's a great follow. And he does a lot of podcast appearances too. The Fed's Financial Stability Report says a couple of things you may be interested in. Okay, tell me what you think about this. Stocks at the current moment, based on historical medians for fundamental and relative valuation, not really overvalued. They're about average. Okay. Real estate, on the other hand, commercial and residential alike, very overvalued. And corporations, even though rates are up, are not really having trouble paying their debt at the moment because for the last several years, they kind of locked in at low rates. And so they have a few years left on the term while inflation's been going up, sort of pumping their bottom line and helping them cover those debts. Now, when I think about, you know, how long can these things last? Okay. Given the environment you just described, given the environment we've talked about on the show an awful lot, stocks aren't really overheated according to the Federal Reserve, which is probably true. Historically, they're probably not overheated. There's not really been enough pain in the stock market yet. That they obviously have longer to fall. Okay. So they're going to fall down more, which is going to be spurred by rising rates. Consumers are going to continue to feel the pinch on the energy side and on the cost of living side, cost of guidance or cost of a good side, services side. And this misguided policy and overstretching from the Fed, it creates an almost perfect cocktail for all these things to fall in succession and compound on each other. So you're going to get worsening economic conditions. I don't know what that's going to look like in the States, but I doubt very much it's going to be nice. Now, then, you know, I don't know if you have the FOMC in the show notes. I think this is a good time to talk about it if you don't. But the FOMC last week, where Fed chair comes out, Powell comes out, who, by the way, I heard called Emperor Palpatine the other day. Outstanding name for Jerome Powell, if you're a Star Wars guy. You know, every time he gets on the mic, no matter how dovish Twitter and the financial sector seems to think the red line is, the Fed minutes document is, he gets on the microphone and smacks down markets 5%. That's what the guy does now. His job is to go on stage, read the same 20 lines, then talk about the markets with the reporters and just completely smack down the market. I think, Len, that, well, I'll ask you, given what you just talked about, given what we've discussed, given what we think as, you know, Bitcoiners and people who observe markets, do you think that they're done with 75 bips, or you think they got more 75 bip raises in the tank?
The fact, I really don't know, but I will not be surprised at all if they continue for at least one more 75 basis points increase. At least one more.
Okay.
At least. I would not be surprised.
I think they're coming to a little bit of a weird crossroads, the Federal Reserve. And I'll tell you why. It seems to me that the common sentiment on, you know, the podcast I listen to, FinTwit, the sort of, you know, the stuff that you and I both pay attention to and listeners and viewers pay attention to, there's two common ways to think. One is that the debt's going to become too large in the US for the interest rates to continue to rise. And the other is that the dollar strength as interest rates continue to rise is going to bulldoze emerging markets to the point where there's too much destruction around the world for the Federal Reserve to continue hiking rates. Now, this is interesting because you have to think about what different kinds of societies need from their currency, right? A young country wants cheap currency because it spurs growth, but a stable country, right? And especially one with an aging population like the United States has, like Canada has, like certain other Western democracies have, where birth rates have come down over the last few decades and things of this nature have forced immigration to play a larger role and on and on and on. Those countries want strong currencies because they need strong currencies to import goods as people age out of the workforce. And so that dollar index is really important. The US has to walk this line between whether or not they think the dollar index is the most important thing or emerging markets being able to supply goods is the most important thing, because they can't have both. They cannot have both. And there's going to be an interesting dichotomy there that's going to come to a head in the next little while. I don't know what the next little while looks like. Maybe it's medium term, maybe it's long term, maybe it's whatever, but you can't do both things. And so they're going to have to choose. And Jerome Powell is going to have to choose. And whoever the next president is going to have to choose. And I am very interested in seeing what they decide. What are they going to save? The Market Huddle had a guest on this week who was saying that, you know, if Jerome Powell was choosing between his three kids, the bond market, the stock market, and the currency, he had to pick only one to save. He thinks they'd save the stock market over there. Do you think that's what they'd go for? Like, they're such a bull equity culture that those are his words, not mine, bull equity culture, that they'd save the stock market. I really am not sure. I honestly don't know, but I really thought this was an interesting thing that, you know, there's some people out there who are smarter than you and me who think they'll let the currency and the bond market destroy themselves before they let the stock market crash to, you know, 2000 or whatever the S&P would hit. What do you think?
Well, they have already allowed the currency to devalue since the inception of the Fed. So they have shown absolutely no interest with propping up and keeping the value of the dollar strong than it was yesteryear. The bond market has been absolutely pathetic for the past little while. Never mind this year, but we've had historically low rates for quite some time. And it's got to be the stock market. The stock market has, just by virtue, been the piggy bank for everybody. People couldn't save money to bank. They had to put in the stock market. So the stock market seems to be the best of the three. That's my choice.
It's weird. I don't know what the answer is. But I'll just close with this. I assume we're going to talk about the Canadian fiscal update and the Canadian stories. So the thing I would say to keep in mind here for the average person, for the, you know, person who's observing these things and doesn't have a strong take one way or the other, the more stories you hear like this, the more podcasts like ours talk about these things, and the more that the average person understands it, like, oh my God, they're just piling problems on constantly here to the economy, to my day-to-day expenses, to my monthly balance sheet, my wife and I, our jobs are insecure, I should say. The way to view this is that these are all just more straws on the camel's back. Every time there's like a clear, like, for example, KJP today talking to the press about the the inflation numbers, someone asked her, and it wasn't even Ducey, it was someone else, presumably a media member a little more friendly to Democratic causes, I should say the causes of the Democratic Party, asked her, you know, you guys keep saying inflation's coming down, but it's at 40-year high still. It's like 8.2. Like, well, how can you say that? And KJP spit out the most indistinguishable gibberish I've ever heard. Something about, well, that's not what the data says. That if we look at the data that economists look at, like CPI and GDP, we know that inflation's coming down. That doesn't fucking mean anything. And a lot of people who didn't know that it didn't mean fuck all a year ago know that it doesn't mean fuck all now. And these straws are just piling on over and over again. More and more people are going to start to look at these guys and the sort of general, since it's the parlance of the day, we'll call them the blue check class, they're going to start to look at these guys and realize they're incompetent. There's a systemic competency shortcoming in politics, in economics, you know, potentially in other disciplines, which I will not get into on this program so we don't get canceled. But, you know, it's clear to see that there are a lot more holes in the boat than we thought 3 years ago. And as these straws continue to pile on, Len, there's going to be one that breaks the camel's back. I don't know what it's going to be. Is it going to be, you know, $150 oil? I don't know. Is it going to be a 10% inflation print? I don't know. Is it going to be 5% unemployment, 10% unemployment? I don't know. But something is going to break the camel's back, and all this other stuff is going to come back to bite whoever the sitting government is. And it's not just going to happen in America. It's going to happen everywhere, because as we've talked about before, most other developed nations, including the most powerful and over in Europe, and even Canada's got like a top 10 economy, they're derivatives of what happens in the US. And that camel's getting tired over there, buddy, is all I'll say.
Let's keep moving. There's so much more to talk about. And I'm not sure if you've been following this saga with LND issues and the Lightning Network, but we'll be talking about it right now in a little bit in depth. So, right, I'm not sure if you're aware. Do you have a Lightning node yourself, Joey? Have you used, have you run one, or have you used it in, you know, in depth?
I watch Lightning node setup videos sometimes on Sunday morning while I have my coffee, and then I turn on Call of Duty, see if Hoddle D's on.
Okay. So there's really two main ways to use Lightning right now. There's a few others, but the two main ways, it's going to be either LND or CLN, aka C Lightning. And I run an LND node. So that's the one I'm familiar with. And each of these two have pros and cons, but regardless, whatever version you use, the base layer of Lightning remains the same. And the best analogy I could come up with is, imagine a service like Wasabi versus Samurai. Each try to achieve the same level of privacy, or the same type of thing where you're providing privacy to the end user, but they do so in different ways. So that's a good way to look at LND versus CLN. And ultimately, though, users shouldn't really notice a difference moving sats between one and another. There are some differences, but just for the average user, it really doesn't make a difference. But in the past few weeks, we had two different instances of LND nodes going tits up, because while this has been causing some issues for a lot of Lightning users, including myself. And ultimately, the code was patched to resolve these issues, and users were required to download the latest version of LND/BTCD. And the first one happened October 9th. And it's my fault. I should have talked about it at that time, but I didn't. But here we are. And the second incident occurred on November 1st. So two times happened within the last month. And each of the two times, LND broke. And apparently, this was the culprit of the same user. And the user, his name is Barack, and he is a developer of CLN. And he's not just a developer of CLN. I think he's got a sense of humor, because when doing a little bit of examination of the transaction that was being done to break the system here, the LND system, well, the OP return data shows that there was a message included that said, "You'll run CLN and you'll be happy." Top-notch trolling right there. So I got to give him credit for that. So the first time he did this, the first time he broke LND, he completed a 998 of 999 taproot multi-sig transaction. That's an incredibly large number of signatures required. And unfortunately, the LND users were not able to handle it, because the nodes, it just didn't recognize it. It was just beyond the capacity of the code. The second time he messed with LND was he was using something called a pay to taproot, P2TR spend. And from what I understand, this contained something that included a requirement for 501,000 pushes, and this exceeded the number of limitation of the code of LND. So it's very, very specific. He purposely did this to break the system. It wasn't really that this was just ready to break down. You had to have done something specific to break LND, but he did it, and he made a light of it. And a lot of people are praising Barack for breaking LND and finding cracks in the system. And other people are upset with him for not knowing about these issues, but not bringing these bugs directly to the developers of LND to have them repair it and do it behind the scenes without damaging LND's reputation. I can see the merits of both arguments, but in my honest opinion, his actions may have potentially fractured the community. I don't think what he's done has done anything to help it bring us together. And in fact, it might be creating a wedge moving forward. And as for me, I'm just happy things were noticed, that these things were patched. It was done at a time where the Lightning Network still is in a phase of growth. It's not really ready for prime time. It sucks these foundational cracks were found, but at least they were observed. And through this exercise, they found ways to fix it. But at least it wasn't done at a time when a lot of people were using it and a lot of people were already on board, and it would really cause a real problem for people. But as for Bitcoiners, though, I'm kind of disappointed that this is not getting a lot of attention. At least I'm not seeing it's getting a lot of attention. We poke fun at a lot of different projects like Solana that has its bi-monthly hiccup, and which grinds the network to a halt. And we make a lot of memes. They fucking post them and yada, yada, yada. But we don't have a lot of engagement from Bitcoiners right now. I'm not sure what level of engagement we should have, but it seems to me that this one, for the most part, has been flying under the radar. And if you look at the facts, Burak found an exploit, and he took advantage of it to bring down LND nodes. Although he didn't profit from it, his actions still negatively impacted users. The LND nodes were offline, and it caused, you know, some issues. And LND nodes, now at this point, after being patched, they're slightly more secure because these holes were patched up. But this also leads me to the next question. How many more holes exist in LND nodes or even CLN that are waiting to be discovered? And if you could bet, like, if one of these exploits are found with potentially CLN, and this knowledge gets passed on to an LND developer, how will they proceed? Will they come and do the same thing that Burak did? If so, will they start a civil war in a Lightning network? And even if they do so, like, and there's no additional interruptions, we did have these two incidents. We had two very, very large disruptions in a very short period of time. And I'm wondering if this helped erode confidence with users and businesses alike. And ultimately, the Lightning Network cannot succeed without mass adoption by businesses and users jumping on board. And taking the Lightning Network out of the equation, transacting on the Bitcoin network, the base layer, may not be optimal for quick purchases. So it's likely, if you want to have Bitcoin survive and be something that's going to be used moving forward, the Lightning Network has to succeed. But this whole story highlights the fact, no matter what you say, what you mean, there's still potentially fundamental flaws in the system that still need to be ironed out. It really isn't yet ready for prime time. We have to fix it. We got to find whatever exploits. I hope we don't have any more, but I think it's bound to happen. We will find some more bugs along the way.
Big shout out to you for bringing this up, because you are an LN user and have been trying to, you know, spread that bug to me and anyone who will listen to you about running a node. And I know our buddy Manny Monero runs a node, and a few other people in the space run a node. This was mentioned at least on RHR. They did a bit of a dive into it last week. And, you know, they raise a good point, and you're raising it too, Len. I think maybe the most important takeaway for the average Lightning node user is the stuff you put on Lightning isn't safe. It's very much a work in progress. And so while it is cool technology, it is very much emergent technology as well. And when you have emergent technology in a cutting edge space like Bitcoin, where a lot of people are, you know, a lot of big brains are posturing to have certain things done to code bases, to protocols, make changes on Gits, et cetera, et cetera. You're bound to get a little bit of infighting, and sometimes that infighting looks like a funny tweet or funny meme or whatever. But other times it looks like an exposed issue with code that costs people money and causes instability. And like you mentioned there, potentially could cause civil wars. As we know, Bitcoin is happy to engage in, right? We've had civil wars in this space in the last little while, and another one wouldn't really be a surprise. I guess I'll play the role of interviewer here, since I don't have a ton more to say about the technical side. Is this going to change the way you approach sharing your interest in Lightning nodes with other Bitcoiners? Are you going to caution maybe against Lightning nodes for the time being? Are you going to caution against certain things, maybe opening multiple channels, or does this change your messaging at all or no?
No, it remains the same. And you hit the nail on the head earlier when you said that the actual project itself is still, I don't want to say bleeding edge, but it's potentially, you could lose your sats whatever you put on it. And this is known whenever you put it on the Lightning network. It's not foolproof, although it's up to date for me, it has been foolproof with respect to getting my sats that I put in there. So I will be more than happy to continue to tell people to use it. And if they have the technical competency, to run your own node, because it does make sense if you are a Lightning enthusiast, and if you want to use it moving forward, to have your own node, because it's a good place to store your sats. But still, it's not 100%. There's always going to be some seed of doubt in your mind that things may go tits up.
Yeah, it's, you know, there's a reason that some of these Lightning nodes, or I shouldn't say some of the Lightning nodes, there's a reason some of the people who are Lightning supporters don't necessarily put a lot of their Bitcoin on Lightning nodes. This is it. You know, it's not necessarily, to your point, not necessarily a knock on the technology, but clearly it's not quite, you know, ready to print yet. And when it gets there, we'll know, and we'll hopefully have most of these bugs worked out. Bitcoin has done a really good job of obviously working out bugs over the years. And I expect that this is no different. I think this is going to be fine. I'd be curious though. You know, I maybe this is an example of a time where if I had run a Lightning node or knew anything about Lightning, you know, technically speaking, we could have a better conversation. So I have to think about doing that for sure.
Yeah, because you know what, it impacted me is when I was logging into my Lightning node during after each of these two exploits, it just was unable to sync. And it was in this constant state of trying to sync, and it never reached 100%. And that was the problem, is that it just went out of sync. And it's too bad. You should get a node and start running it, see what it's all about. But yeah, don't put a heck of a lot on it, because you never know what's going to happen. Just put, you know, whatever you're willing to lose, and you'll sleep good at night. That's the same with just about anything when you're putting money on if you leave money on exchange. Like if you're going to leave it on the exchange, only leave the stuff that, you know, if you lose it, you're sleeping well at night, because
that's right, man.
Yeah, take it off as soon as you can. That's what I always say. That's a totally different subject. But on to the Canadian side. Well, this is a new topic that I think we should be bringing up. Clown World North. I think we should do this. Let's do Clown World North. And let's lead off with a Nanos research survey came out this past week. And with it came some interesting data showing that nearly half of Canadians report being worse off financially than a year ago. This to me is interesting, Ed, because I would like to know of the other half who does not believe they are worse off financially compared to you a year ago, because I thought everybody was worse off. What the fuck do I know? Respondents are reporting that they have been worse off, and this is the worst it's ever been since they started reporting this on Nanos. So in terms of the level of how bad things are, Nanos has never had a time worse than this. So only 13% of the respondents said their finances have improved in the past year. Who the hell are these 13%? I'd love to know who they are. Respondents are also pessimistic about the economy, with 64% expecting it to deteriorate over the next 6 months. People can see the writing on the wall. And the survey also comes on the heel of another one that indicated that 20% of Canadians were reducing meal sizes or skipping meals to save money. Well, you want more stats, Joey? Well, here is the tip of the spear. And we talked about how important the housing market is to Canada. Well, 47% of Toronto realtors sold zero properties in the last 12 months. Zero. So nearly half of retailers in Toronto sold zilch in 12 months. Holy fuck. I suspect a number of these realtors are probably working part-time, but still, to me, it's a very telling stat. And things will continue to get worse moving forward in the housing market as they continue to progress down this monetary experiment. And another thing to look at, Canadian building permits, they're down 17.5% in September. Not looking good. And the importance of the housing market to the Canadian economy, again, it cannot be overstated. If this continues to slide, well, we're going to have to do a lot more than just cutting out Disney Plus subscriptions to make ends meet. And for those unaware of the Disney Plus reference, we got some sage advice from our finance minister, and where she publicly declared that she canceled her Disney Plus subscription as a way to cut costs. And remember, this is coming from somebody who is arguably has the second most important position in Canadian politics. She's in charge of our nation's finances. In terms of how much she makes, well, it's over $270,000 annually. The home in which she lives in, it's in the Summerhill neighborhood in Toronto, a very, very nice neighborhood. She bought the home about 10 years ago, $1.3 million at the time. It was in 2013. And I would imagine the price of that home has gone 3x or maybe even higher since the purchase price. And she's concerned about a $9 a month charge. Jesus fucking Christ, we are in trouble. And you touched upon it. Let's go a little bit more in depth. They had the release of the mini budget this past week, and there were a couple of goodies that I want to talk about. Number one, Canada is going to impose a 2% tax on stock buyback starting as January 1st, 2024. Not sure how much of an impact this is going to be with stock buybacks, but it's going to be a tax grab. They need as much money as possible.
I think it's just on energy stock buybacks.
Oh, so it's not across the board. It's very specific to that?
Very directed at oil and gas, which is even worse.
The second thing is, well, they've permanently eliminated student loan interest. And here is some non-financial advice, but take this. It's a 4D chess move. Rack up as much interest or as much student loan debt as you can. Use that to buy Bitcoin. Since the loan is going to be interest-free, it's fucking free money. You're good to go. But as somebody mentioned, because this truly is not non-financial advice, it's the provincial student loan interest that is really the killer. So you may be saving on the federal interest loans, but the interest on the provincial ones is really the big killer here. And the last thing I want to bring up, well, it's the Canadian Armed Forces. And I'm not sure if you saw this one. They're experiencing poor levels of recruitment. And as for a way to deal with this problem, Joey, they have opened the door for permanent residents to enlist. So a permanent resident in Canada living for 10 years is now eligible to enlist. So based on the laws, a permanent resident is not entitled to vote, but you are now potentially able to die for the country. What the fuck is this all about? That's fucking incredible. If you're going to die for the country, you should at least have the ability to fucking vote for it too. I don't know. I know this happened, like they allow this in other nations, but the fact that it's happening here, man, it's so much clown world shit that's going on. And it's unbelievable.
Bro, I got so much more to add to this. Okay, so that student loan thing is going to cost us $2.7 billion over 5 years and then about $550 million annually after that. That's a huge chunk of money. That's inflationary as well, by the way. So just add that. That's all stimulus. All those people who weren't paying interest, we've discussed this before. There's a polite way to put this. I don't care much about doing that tonight. There's a certain kind of person who needs student loan forgiveness. Those kinds of people are not close enough to becoming investors and saving money and building wealth, generational wealth, that this makes a difference. So what you're going to get is these people spending money on goods, services, and trinkets. They're not going to be any better off, but they will for sure contribute to inflationary pressures in the country. So well done there. Very interesting stuff. Average. Okay. Freeland was going to be my no coiner because of that Netflix comment or that Disney Plus comment. I am astonished. Like whether or not I agree with her politics completely aside. Okay. From a strategic standpoint, and I can't wait. I got to listen to the strategist maybe tonight while I'm watching Monday Night Football or tomorrow when I'm walking my dog. I need to hear what those guys think about that comment. That has to be one of the most poorly timed, tone-deaf things I've ever heard. That is poor political strategy in my view, and I suspect a lot of other people feel that way regardless of politics, because no matter who you vote for, you're not really going to be keen on hearing someone who makes $250,000 or whatever it is, $275,000 a year, talk about how they made a significant cut to their budget by eliminating the $13.99 Disney Plus charge every month. That's really hard to hear. That's very difficult to hear for a lot of Canadians. The median income in 2020, Len, was only about $40,600 in this country. Mm-hmm. So you can imagine how that feels to hear that from someone who's telling you that she's got your best interests in mind. Very disappointing. I'm very disappointed in that comment as a Canadian. Interesting stuff here. After that fiscal update, the snapshot or whatever they're calling it, where it was all rosy, it's going to be Canada's decade. Did you see what the Bank of Canada announced?
I saw something and I'm going to be talking about that next, but you go ahead.
They halted inflation protected bonds sales
yes.
to Canadian citizens.
Yes.
So things are going so well that we're issuing Ukraine war bonds while also halting basically our TIPS bonds. It's you can't make this up. You cannot invent. Also, like just the timing. You're telling me that you couldn't wait or do this like a day earlier, a day later, a week later, a month later. You had to do it right after. We heard from our finance minister that things were looking good and we were rosy, that we were in the right position to take advantage of all these things. We had to do it right then and there, that Canadians can no longer protect themselves from inflation using government investment vehicles. We had to do it there. That's embarrassing in my view. It's another straw on the camel's back, like I said earlier, okay? Also in that fiscal economic update, they're going to be doing some consulting on crypto and CBDCs.
We'll be talking about that next.
Okay, so yeah, I'll leave that.
I'm curious.
I just wanted to mention it. That's all. We'll talk about it in more detail. No problem. We're already going long here, so I'll leave that alone.
It's going to be a four-hour show.
Ben Rabideau of Edge Realty Analytics who everyone should be following on Twitter, who I want to be on the third panel in this program at some point, put out a tweet last week where he says that he's heard from one elected MP that part of the reason Canada wants to increase their immigration intake to 500,000 in 2025, even amidst all these shortages in housing permits, even amidst the you know 30, 40 year housing bubble, no matter what these other things are doing to the Canadian population in terms of cost of living, the reason that the government wants to increase immigration to that level is because they want to prop up the housing market pricing. They want to prop up the price of Canadian homes to protect the economy. That's a disaster. If that is the case, that is a disaster. We cannot allow this. This is policy that, like, if you want to talk about kicking a can down the road, that's fucking it right there. That's how it looks. That's how short-sighted looks. And as Canadians, we should be concerned about that. There's a lot of great immigrants in this country, and I want more immigrants in this country. You know, it's what makes this country great, I think, in a lot of ways. Some people may disagree with that. I personally think that, you know, my life has been made better because of the immigration in this country. I've been exposed to a lot of great people and a lot of great cultures, but this is not the way to do it. These people are not going to have a shot. Ritesh Jain, who we've had on the show, who's an immigrant himself, tweets about this all the time and has been tweeting about it more over the last week or so, that you got to reconsider if you're an Indian immigrant coming here or an immigrant from any country coming here. You're not going to get the quality of life that you've been promised and the quality of life that you think you're entitled to. Completely insane. Okay. This is nuts. We can't do this. The CBC got $42 million in funding for pandemic recovery. What was wrong with the CBC during the pandemic? It seemed to me like CBC was on TV every day. What exactly are they recovering from, Len? Do you know? Were they boosted?
I don't know. And if
how was their recovery going?
I would have thought that if anything, they would have had a higher viewership and listenership as more people are home.
Was the prime minister not on TV on the CBC every day? Like, everyone was watching that stuff for the first, at least for the first month. Everyone I know was talking about that, you know? And it
don't
was
forget
on TV
about
every
the
day.
1 o'clock, Doug Ford.
Dougie thing. Was on all the
every, was it 1 o'clock or something. I recall that every day.
Every day they were on there. And so I don't know what exactly they were recovering from, but I know that $42 million is coming from you and me. The energy buyback you talked about, you know, how can you look at this stuff and, you know, think that you're in a good spot as a Canadian? What's the bull case, as they say, for Canada at the moment? What is it? We can't drill for oil, and oil companies can't do buybacks. What are they going to do with the money? They're going to buy ASICs. I fucking hope, but I doubt it. What are they going to do? They're going to Scrooge McDuck pool of cash. What's the plan? They can't do anything with the money. What are we talking about here? This is not how you run a first world country. And we're not the only country doing this. This is not specifically a Canadian problem. You just heard Biden over the last 48 hours, 72 hours, not to drag it back to America, and I'll let you carry on after this. But like, this guy talking about he's not limiting permits. KJP, you know, is up there talking about how he's not limiting permits. Then he's getting on stage at rallies and going, there's no more drilling under us, no new drilling. What the fuck is going on? Who believes this stuff? Who looks at this and says, we're in a great spot here as a modern society, as a modern economy? Liberal democracies are the place that I am long for the next 20 years. This is the system that's going to continue to work as technology helps people get away from this insanity and become difficult to collect taxes from, et cetera, et cetera. Who thinks this is going to work? Who's long on this idea? Because it ain't me. It ain't me. I doubt very much it's you. And I doubt very much people listening are long on this idea either. We've gotten so far away from the things that made us great, so far away from the things that made us great as a country, as a political system, you know, even. Really disappointing to see. Anyway, that's it. I just wanted to let people know. I think this is, you know, we should be embarrassed almost to be, you know, part of this. I know it's not our fault, you know, so to speak, but sad times, man. Sad times.
It's Clown World North. That's going to be the new topic on a weekly basis for us. And I say that, I don't think I've said this enough times, but you should be highlighting your strengths and hiding your weaknesses. And Canada has a lot of strengths, and we're not playing to that advantage. We have a lot of energy. We have a lot of natural resources, gold, silver, nickel, you name it, uranium, clean water. We have so much. But yeah, we can't shut it away. We have to use that to our advantage as much.
Great podcast, though. Great podcast here in Canada.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. So moving on, I do want to talk about what was mentioned in the mini budget, and they talked about the CBDC, where Canada's government is, they have announced they're going to be launching consultation on what they say, quote, cryptocurrencies, stable coins, and central bank digital currencies, end quote. This was released last Thursday. And to address this, the government is going to be doing the consultation, and it's going to be, includes, will be some legislation review, legislative review, addressing financial stability and security, as well as digitization of the currencies, according to the document. And while they're going to be trying to shore up the financial sector, it looks like CBDCs are coming out in terms of what they're going to be rolling out in terms of gathering more information. I've talked about this a long time now. I don't see this as being replacing the Canadian dollar, and even anywhere else. I don't see it just replacing whatever currency. If anything, it's going to be, there's going to be a small scale rollout, because you can't fuck things up when it comes to finances. And we haven't seen a full scale CBDC anywhere in the world, although we have seen CBDCs released in some parts of the world on a, I guess we'll call it a pilot basis. But everywhere, it seems like all central banks are looking into more and more about CBDCs. This is something that is very, very concerning to me, because along with the CBDCs comes with a lot of information, and information can be used against people, and you could easily program a CBDC to be spent where you want it to be spent, and it could be spent up to a period of time. So there could be an end date on when the currency is still valid. So they could really change on our actual spending habits moving forward. And if you think this is just in Canada, no, no. Even in the States, there's been something called Project Hamilton, and it's with respect to CBDCs. And this has been going on for over a year, from what I understand. And it's being done by the Federal Reserve of Boston. And I don't think this is a coincidence that Boston's doing it, because MIT has open CBDC. And I'm sure there's some collaboration between the Federal Reserve Office over there and MIT. There's going to be so much coming out in a little bit of time about CBDCs. Be very careful. I think there's going to be a period of time, whenever this gets released, you're not going to be able to spend your CBDCs to buy Bitcoin. They're going to close the on-ramp to buy Bitcoin, and that's going to be detrimental to the Bitcoin price.
They're going to try and close it for sure. I'm sure they've considered that already. It's interesting. I saw a quote from CoinDesk today, I think on one of the Bitcoin Twitter accounts, I forget which one, but that the EU in there, or sorry, the UK, I should say. Oh, is it the EU or the UK?
It's the European Central Bank.
Yeah, talking about how there's going to be savings caps and time limits, basically, on the CBDC, as if this is news to anyone who's been paying attention. I remember being hammered in the car with my now wife, her mom and dad, and her brother. This is like probably 8 or 9 years ago. Not 8 or 9 years ago. It's probably 2017. Whenever I first started buying Bitcoin and getting into this stuff, so maybe 5 years ago, 6 years ago. Talking about CBDCs and saying exactly this stuff, because I had heard Pierre Rochard talking about it. I had heard Bitstein talking about it. I had heard Saifedean talking about it. All these Bitcoiners, maybe not Saifedean, but like Bitcoiners at the time who were trying to raise red flags that this was going to happen. And I remember like just being looked at like, you know, oh, you're crazy. That's never going to happen, blah, blah, blah. Time limits, savings caps, or like, you know, nudging on spending and behavior vis-a-vis digital currencies. We're here. We're here. 5 years later, here we are. The guy in the UK is talking about rolling out universal basic income. The new guy, I forget his name. But you know, you think that's going to come in paper money? I doubt it. And it seems highly unlikely to me. It's going to be. I wouldn't be surprised at all to see some kind of digitally native pound sterling or pound sterling sibling be part of that program. You've said this many times that CBDC. Is sort of the perfect platform to roll out a UBI program, because you don't really need it to be the entire system. It's a great way to work out the kinks. I think that's what you're going to see. It seems more and more likely by the day, doesn't it?
And so I was saying this earlier, a good way to encourage people to onboard on the CBDCs is you can incentivize the usage of it, potentially even lower the amount of taxes you paid by using it. Right now in Ontario, we pay 13% when we buy just about anything. And what if by chance, you know, by using a CBDC, instead of paying 13%, your taxes are going to be 9% or 10%. Yeah, people will be very incentivized to use it. They'll say, to hell with my privacy, because they don't give a shit.
When 50% of people are living paycheck to paycheck, like you've said before, you know, that every dollar counts. And when the dollars are free of effort to create and effort to, you know, disaster.
Yeah. And that's just, I mean, I'm spitballing. There could be a million different ways to incentivize these things. And people that are much, much smarter than me could figure this thing out. But it's going to be very scary stuff. But moving on, some more scary stuff is that when we talked a little while ago, a while back about Quebec, that they were going to be running out of energy, that there's the demand for energy is going to be outstripping the supply of it. Well, Quebec has announced they're going to stop the sale of electricity to miners, and they're going to request this suspension of the allocation of electricity to blockchain industry. And this is very interesting. So this is the Hydro-Quebec. They filed a request with the Régie de l'Énergie. God, my French is very, very bad. And this is with regard to the suspension of this allocation for the blockchain industry. And it's approximately 270 megawatts were slated to be dedicated to cryptographic use over the short term. But the allocation of the amount of capacity would be increased, would increase pressure on the current balances. And really, the first thing that comes to mind when they're going to be stopping the sale of electricity to Bitcoin miners is what's going to happen to, well, number one, Bitfarms, the second one being Sato Technologies, Bitfarms being much bigger than Sato, but still, those two come up to mind immediately. So number one, Bitfarms, they came out and they said it's not really going to impact them. And from what I understand, Bitfarms deals directly with Hydro Sherbrooke and not Hydro Quebec, so they shouldn't be impacted based off this, but I got to do some more investigating. As for Sato Technologies, I reached out to their CEO and I asked him if this is going to be impactful for them. And he says that it's more for future expansion or for new entrants, according to him. He says the block of 270 megawatts is the same from 2018. It seems that they finally took a decision, but there's still opportunities for local players bringing added value to Quebec, according to him. So good news is this whole exercise of reducing the amount of power that's going to be sent to Bitcoin miners, it's not going to impact Bitfarms or Sato Technologies moving forward. But I think that Bitfarms is probably going to start to find or try to find ways to get out of Quebec moving forward. I have a sneaky suspicion they're going to work some deals with their operations in South America. Should things go really bad in Quebec, they're going to have to move all that equipment somewhere. Where's it going to go? Probably not to their Washington location. It's probably going to go to South America. So I suspect they're making contingency plans should things go really, really bad in Quebec. And it's going to happen soon, I think. Quebec is going to run out of power.
Ben's a smart guy, chief mining officer with Bitfarms. Maybe we should get him on. I know he's been doing the rounds. I'm sure he'd come on and talk to us again. I'd be curious to see what he's got to say about this. We've talked a lot about Bitcoin miners last little while. I talked about them with Mark Jeftovic, 2 weeks ago now. You and I have spoken about them, and we talked about them last Wednesday with Gandalf and during our interview. And I don't know what the, miners moving to places where politics are unpredictable is a difficult pill for me to swallow. And South America, maybe not quite as unpredictable as certain other places, Russia, for example, but it ain't Quebec, And if you're a Bitfarms bull, cheap power is part of the equation, but you can't be in a place with cheap power if the government can show up with machine guns and, you got to pay local gangs to protect your hardware and like all this stuff. And maybe that's just me painting with too broad a brush and being ignorant of those cultures. But it seems to me like this is the case in a lot of the spots these miners are setting up. I don't know. I personally wouldn't like that, but I don't want to speculate. I think we should try and get Ben to come on the show maybe in December when we're a little light for guests, and see if he's got some thoughts on that. I'm sure he does. I'm sure he's considered it already, and I'm sure they've weighed the pros and the cons. I'd love to hear what they are.
Yeah. All right. Last Canadian story, and then I have one more rest of the news story. So the last Canadian story is Bitcoin ATM locations in Canada has jumped 28% from the last year. And we talked recently to Bitcoin Well CEO Adam O'Brien, and they have a number of Bitcoin ATMs that they have rolled out in Canada. So Canada right now has 2,549 Bitcoin ATMs that have been rolled out. 400 extra were rolled out just this year, according to this. And it's been 9 years since the first ATM was installed. In fact, the first ATM in the world that was ever installed was done in Waves Cafe in Vancouver, from what I'm reading here. And so in terms of 2,549 Bitcoin ATMs, what does this compare to with traditional ATMs? I've read some statistics. There's around 65,000 ATMs from traditional finance that are located throughout Canada. So you can see the comparison between the two. In terms of the functionality between the two ATMs, they're going to be slightly different, but still it gives you an idea where it has to, there's still some room for growth. But there you go. There's still, it's growing 20% increase year over year. Seems rather encouraging. Let's see if they could keep this up.
Yeah, so they did, they made some changes to their online suite of services the other day.
You're talking about Bitcoin Well specifically.
Yeah, specifically. Yeah, I mean, I may as well talk about this. I did kind of want to mention it because it's a Canadian company. We like Adam a lot. We're big fans of his. They have a service where you can buy Bitcoin online non-custodially. So, you know, ShakePay is a great place to buy Bitcoin. It's where I buy, you know, 99% of my Bitcoin. But if you ever want to do non-custodial, I think this is a good option. It's a little more expensive, as Adam would admit and has admitted on this show. But they just made an upgrade to their service where once you have to go through your password and username and set your wallet address again, now that they've done this change, but they actually give you a UTXO faster than the Block Explorer registers it. So you can go to a Block Explorer with the UTXO they give you and it won't be there. And before you know it, the transaction's in your wallet. Like for me, I just use my Blue wallet, for example, and the transaction's, it's there before you even get your UTXO onto the Block Explorer. It's wild how fast it is. So I don't know how they're doing that. I'd be curious. Maybe we'll have to talk to them again. But as far as ATMs, have you, you know, considered moving some percentage of your buys to ATMs because it's kind of like light KYC, or are you still not there?
I'm not there yet. So I don't know. I'm just not there yet. I'm
like,
happy
how are ATMs going to grab you? Maybe the better way to phrase the question, if you understand the value of light KYC Bitcoin and you're willing to pay a bit of a premium for it, like you were mining, you've talked about how you were mining on this show before, and you know, mm-hmm. you may not be anymore, but you understand that there's a premium to pay for these things. Mm-hmm. You want the KYC free Bitcoin or close to KYC free Bitcoin. You know about the ATMs, presumably where we live in Southern Ontario, you could, you know, if not walk to one, probably drive to one in less than 5 or 10 minutes, and still me and you don't go there. What's missing? How can they grab guys like us? Cause we're the target demo, I think. How can they do it?
Yeah. And it's just basically that you have to sell the fact that it's KYC free. I think it's, if you buy less than 1,000 per day,
it's light KYC, they would say.
Okay. I don't know what to say. It's just, I'm happy with my service from ShakePay. That's it. I use it. I'm familiar with it. And I say this because not only because they're a sponsor of the show, but I've been using them for years. So I'm happy with the level of service. As soon as you deposit money into them, it's there. And then you can just buy it and it's a free transaction fee. So that's why I use it, just for simplicity's sake. But
yeah.
Yeah. All right. That's it for the Canadian side. Got one story to talk about before we wrap things up. Fidelity, they are now going to be offering zero fee crypto trading to their retail investors. And they're set to be releasing this momentarily. They haven't launched, they haven't exactly put a launch date yet, but there is an early access waiting list that you could sign up to get access to this. And it's going to be allowing retailers to invest in Bitcoin or ETH commission free. Fidelity is not really, it's fucking huge. And it's going to be, you know, it's going to open up the door for other banks along that ilk to do the same. And yeah, I just like seeing stories like this. Are people going to be flocking to buying Bitcoin? Probably not, but it's a sign of the times. They got to be offering more services to their clients. And here we go, Fidelity, they're opening up and it's going to be commission free. So really cool.
Commission free is just Latin for custodial. So I'm not that hyped about that, but I was listening to the On the Brink Castle Island podcast last week and they mentioned this. And I think the one guy worked there, if not both of them, worked at Fidelity for a bit. And they were saying two things that really caught my attention and should catch yours too. One is that for a ship the size of Fidelity to pivot from basically Bitcoin is poison to offering Bitcoin to their clients in a trading, like on a trading platform, is enormous. And it's indicative that there's a lot more coming in Bitcoin and Ethereum on that platform under that umbrella. That's one thing. The other thing is that Fidelity is competing with some of the biggest, you know, banks / platforms in the world. And so if Fidelity made that pivot as quickly as they did, it's a sign that others are doing the same. and thinking about adding similar suites of services related to Bitcoin and Ethereum. So make of that what you will. I happen to agree with that take that if one company is doing it, the likelihood of others doing it is very high. And Fidelity, you know, ain't nothing to fuck with. That's for sure. They got their ducks in a row over there. So let's see. Exciting times, man. If you're a Bitcoin holder, and I suppose if you hold the other token as well, you could be hyped about that. But I won't mention it.
Well, it's of course, when one offers it, the other ones are going to have to do it. It's tit for tat. Is if they're offering it, if one a bank is offering it, they're not going to risk losing a customer by having this, you know, another big bank not offer the same type of services. So really, when one offers it, it's and the rest of them eventually starts to offer it in the not too distant future. So don't be too surprised to hear other big banks, Bank of America, and everybody else do the same thing in the next little while. And so that's it for the stories. I have a Bitcoiner or no coiner of the week. You have a no coiner of the week, from what I understand.
It's Freeland. I'm going to bring up the branding here and tell you that no matter what the price is, it's a bull market at sponsor for the no coiner and Bitcoiner of the week section, Tahini's Restaurants, the best Mediterranean cuisine in Southern Ontario, maybe other places too, though we don't know exactly where they all are. So if you're looking to get a bowl, you know, don't smoke it. Go buy it at Tahini's.
And they just opened up a new location in Richmond Hill. So there lots of opportunities.
Is Ali feeding you these locations? Like, how do you know this? Like, you don't live near Richmond Hill. How do you keep track of all this? You got like a Tahini's app on your phone, sends you a push notification when there's a new place to get a shawarma or what?
It comes to my feed. And when I see it, I like it. So it's going to continually come up on my feed. I like Tahini's. I like Ali, and I'm going to pump his product and him as much as I can because he's good for Bitcoin and he's been on our show. He's been very friendly.
He's good people, man. We've met him a couple times in person. He's an awesome guy.
Yeah. So I'm going to pump his product. So here we are. But yeah, do you want to elaborate on your no coiner of the week or just leave it at that?
I'll just remind people that, you know, I don't think it's necessarily about politics and about policy when it comes to comments like this. I think it's disappointing for a number of reasons. And chief among them is that it shows how wide the gap is between the reality that you're living and the reality that the people telling you what's good for you are living. And that gap is as wide as it's ever been. And because of that, I think you're seeing policy errors. You're seeing, you know, things that are making your life worse, and it's not really a mechanism for you to provide feedback outside of the ballot box. Think about that next time you vote. I think a lot of people, you know, who watch this show and listen to this show probably vote, you know, for different parties or if they vote at all. But think about that, man. And most importantly, you know, it's not about shooting off mean memes on Twitter or LOL messages on Twitter, which I am, you know, happy to do every day. But also, when you talk to friends and family, remind them of that. You know, you have to make an emotional appeal sometimes to get your foot in the door with people. Like, you know, the next time you think about what you want for dinner, you know, and you're getting Uber Eats and you decide to get pizza instead of going to some restaurant, or you have to cut back on Christmas gifts, or you, I don't know, like, what do people do? They maybe don't fill their car as much, or like you mentioned, if you're one of these people who has to go to a food bank, like, there's no shame in that, but understand that there are people out there who would prefer to tell you to cut your Disney Plus subscription than try and make things better for you in ways that make sense on the ground. And as a Canadian, that should be unacceptable to you. That's all I'll say.
That's a let them eat cake. That's the best way to describe it.
Yeah.
And my Bitcoiner and no coiner of the week is the same person. I don't know if we've done this before, but for me this week, it is the same person. It's SBF. And the reason why he's my Bitcoiner of the week is because he is so neck deep in shitcoins with his FTX exchange. And should this thing go tits up, a lot of people that are in the shitcoin field, they're going to realize that what they invested in has absolutely no value. And it may turn a lot of these people, or at least some of them, into Bitcoiners. So that's why he's my Bitcoiner of the week. And why he's my no coiner of the week is because he is neck deep into these shit coins. And it unfortunately, as a result of that, it's going to cause a lot of people to lose a great deal of wealth should FTX go tits up. So that is why SBF is my Bitcoiner and no coiner of the week. I don't think we had this before, but this is, I think it was a good time to do it.
First time for everything here at CBP Media. So that's it. Price of Bitcoin right now, $20,670 US, and in Canadian, Len, what do you got?
27,816. We've been relatively flat since we started the show.
Flat show.
No.
That was a long rip. That was a long rip. 100 hour and 40 minutes almost. Anyway, so tomorrow night, election night. I don't know how that's going to be, but I'm sure it'll be entertaining. I guarantee you that. And then Wednesday, we got Tom and Nick Carrazza coming on from the Your Life, Your Term show. So tune in to both nights. And then you won't hear from me for a few days because God of War will be out and I'll be glued to my TV. So
enjoy.
Find someone else to talk to online. Anyway, God bless you. Take care of yourselves. We'll see you tomorrow night.
Yeah, take care, everyone.